Profile. Late nights on Cape Talk. Cape Talk.
Now, when her daughter Laura took her own life in Dubai in 2015, Leona Sykes began battling for answers, and she's been doing so ever since. Laura plunged to her death from the Burj Khalifa 3 years ago, but there are still conflicting accounts of her final moments. Leona says her daughter's death was covered up by the Dubai government, and she's put together a book of her daughter's final moments and joins us now to talk about it. Who Laura was?
Well, Laura was my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She spent a lot of time living in the Middle East. And she died there.
Yeah.
She fell to her death from the 148th floor of the Burj Khalifa. She died by suicide.
She grew up here with you, yes. Sort of with you and sort of not with you,
yes.
At times.
Yes.
Just tell us a little bit more about her childhood.
She lived with me and my partner for the first few years, and then she went and lived with her father in Portugal for 3 years, came back and lived with me again.
What sort of person was she?
Difficult.
Mm.
Feisty. Stubborn. Not easy.
Mm. I found myself relating to her a lot. The description of her at the beginning and also how she presented through her emails and Facebook posts. She also suffered with bulimia.
Yes.
For a long time.
Yes. Well, it was anorexia firstly and then bulimia, which was horrific.
Mm. At what point did she decide to move to Dubai and why?
She always felt that she had Arabic blood. She always felt like she was partially Arab and possibly the Portuguese part of her, because I think there was quite a bit of Arabic influence in certain parts. So, yeah, she never actually fitted in the sort of European society in South Africa. Started off with the Indians. She used to mix with Indians and then Arabs.
And is that where she found a home? Is that where she was happiest?
Yes, she said that was the place where, she was happiest there.
Yeah, yeah. When she moved, what was your relationship at that point? Because you describe it, you've sort of got a foreword in the book which describes before we get to the entries from Laura and her Facebook posts and the emails, etc. You kind of give a brief overview of your relationship and your life with Laura. How was that?
It was difficult again, mm. And we would just look at each other and we would fight.
Mm.
Like even if we walk in the forest, we'd fight. If we went for ride on the horses, we'd fight. Everything, we would always fight.
And she said that's because you were similar.
Yes, and I didn't like to think that we were similar because it was always this fighting amongst us.
Mm.
So, no, I didn't want her to be, I didn't want us to be similar.
Yeah.
But she was right. We were very similar.
When did you come to the realization that she was right?
After she died.
Mm.
Mm. Going through everything.
Yeah. So the story is, and I've also looked at news reports around her death just to try and piece together sort of a fuller picture. She'd moved to Dubai, and it wasn't until her death that you were aware of this relationship. Is that right?
No, she did mention it.
Oh, she had mentioned it.
Yes,
right,
she mentioned it around 2009, 2010. I think people that work in Dubai generally would like to mix with locals as opposed to other expats. And she met him, and she was very excited. She met him through work because she was a masseuse. But she didn't really talk much about him. She just said that he was working for a member of the royal family in finances, and she was taken with him. But she never ever, I don't think she even mentioned his name Mubarak in those days, and definitely not his surname.
Mm.
So I only found out about his surname and who he was after her death.
Just take us, and unfortunately the nature of what transpired is that we need to really start from the end of Laura's life and sort of work backwards. Where were you when you first heard when you first got the news that she'd passed?
In Durban. My late husband and I, we moved back to Durban. We were going to do another development. That was when her father's partner phoned me to tell me that she died. And, yeah, so
had you been in contact? Had you been
No, we were estranged because she came back to South Africa at the end of 2012. She was in the state because of her relationship with Mubarak. She came back. It was a total nightmare for us. I think we ended up many times hating each other totally. Mm. And then she went back, and there was quite a lot of hardship for her.
So between the time that you'd last spoken to her and the time that she died, where were you in terms of your relationship with her? Because I know that you wrote in the book that there was a point at which you were prepared to never see her again.
Yes. We had very, very little contact after, particularly in 2014. I wanted her to come back to South Africa, even though it was quite tough for me and my husband, because my husband had been diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Mm.
So financially and health-wise, everything was a very difficult situation. And with her being a very difficult person, it would have added to the stress.
Mm, mm.
But I just felt she had to come back, but she didn't want to come back. Because every time she came back to South Africa, she hated it.
Mm.
She missed Dubai. Mm. And she missed Mubarak. And she would never, ever settle here.
So once that phone call was received from your ex-husband's...
From Lara's father's partner.
What was your first, not your first reaction, what was your first action? Did you go immediately to Dubai?
No, I couldn't. My husband was dying.
Mm.
I couldn't leave him. So, no, I couldn't.
Were you surprised when you were told what had happened?
Yes. It was a shock.
That it was suicide?
Yes. Well, I never ever thought that she was suicidal.
Yeah.
She's a strong person.
Mm.
Even though life could be tough, she would always survive. So it was a huge shock.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that I particularly related to, and my brother took his own life in 2001, is the idea that we are so powerless as family. And for us, there was very much a thought of what could we have done? What could we have done differently?
Yes, yes.
Was that, do you relate to that? Was that something that you thought, or did you come soon to the realization of there was nothing we could have done? And do you believe that there was anything you could have done?
If we did do anything, I believe she would still have gone back to Dubai, and I think it would still have happened.
Hmm.
Like I felt when I brought her back in 2012, I basically delayed the inevitable.
Inevitable, yeah.
And then she suffered even more for another 2 years, so...
What emerged when and you eventually did go to Dubai? What were you left with in terms of her possessions, her bag? What happened?
This is her bag. I thought I'd bring it.
Sure.
This is what arrived. And there are a few items in there. I've got a few of my own items in there.
May I?
Yes. There were a lot more items. I'm wearing her perfume, which was in there.
Sure.
But I haven't put it in there. You'll see. No, those
are mine.
Hers are
yours.
No, those are mine. I'll tell you what is hers. The key ring.
Ah, now this you mentioned.
Yes.
Yeah.
With the Dubai Diva on it.
Yeah.
And then you think, I often thought, well, I wonder which doors those keys unlocked, because there are quite a number of keys there. And she moved around a lot. She was a bit like a gypsy.
And you weren't sure when you were in Dubai where she'd been living. You kind of had to trace back.
Yeah, I knew where she had been living, because if you look in there.
Oh, sorry. I was under the impression that you weren't sure before when you got to Dubai where she'd been.
No, I did.
Oh, you did.
This bag arrived on the 7th of January. And if you look in there, you'll see. Because it was, as far as I was concerned, it was sloppy police work.
Right. And you write about this in the book, and it's on the back of the book. You say that her death was covered up by the Dubai government. Talk about that a little bit. What do you mean by it was covered up?
Well, no one really wanted to talk about it. They wouldn't tell me where she'd been staying. It wasn't. I thought that she could have been murdered, because it wasn't in the news. I thought it was a mistake or a joke, or she was murdered.
You did something that I thought was incredibly, I mean, I can understand why you did it, but you actually, when you were in Dubai, you went to Dubai and you asked to see the video footage.
Yes.
From the Burj. That must have been incredibly difficult.
It was, but I have a habit of blocking things. So I can block and see and... feel it later. That's what happened.
And how was she able to do this? I mean, we're thinking about the tallest building in the world. You'd imagine that security would be in place, that people were not able to I'm still quite baffled as to how this was able to happen.
Yes, well, that's why I had to go and look at it myself, because I couldn't understand it, and I was in communication with the Dubai police as well, which I was really fortunate they answered, and other things happened after that. But, I was going crazy because I couldn't understand how there would be all these people milling around. And there were these windows over there. Yes, I saw some publicity windows and shots where they encouraged people to stick half their bodies out of those gaps, the lower gaps, to take selfies, which I thought was very irresponsible because you can slip and fall. And then higher up, they had bigger gaps. So I actually sent emails of saying that, well, she must have actually clambered up there. Why didn't anyone stop her? You know, so I couldn't understand it. I was going crazy. Then I also thought, because there were two emails from the Portuguese embassy. The first one said she'd fallen to her death from the 38th floor. They didn't say where. So then I thought, then the second one said the 148th floor of the Burj Khalifa. So I thought, well, maybe she didn't fall from there, because how could she? So then I looked at the 38th floor, and those were five signature suites of the Armani Hotel. So I thought, well, she might have been there, had an argument with someone, and they pushed her over.
Mm.
So that was part of what was going on in my mind.
But you are convinced today that it was suicide?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I saw it. I saw it.
Oh, Leona.
No, I had to. I had to, because I was going crazy, and I had to see it. And I blocked it. And it was crazy because afterwards I said to them, well, I'm now going off to Daira. I'm going to go and look at the flea markets there. But that's how my mind works. I block.
What's made you put this book together? Because some people would say, you know, some people would ask, is this for your own healing? Is it so that you set the record straight? And in a way it would fall into memoir autobiography, but also not, because it's not been written for that purpose. These are memories and posts and thoughts, that Laura, had jotted down and written, during her life. So why the book?
This is supposedly the second book. The first book is going to be the story, which I plan to write, but I found it very difficult to write for obvious reasons. So I thought I needed to put this book out first. And basically, if anyone's interested in the story, it's an introduction to her, who she was.
Yeah.
And I also wanted her to have the glory of being the writing the book.
How do you think she would feel about it?
She'd be very amused.
Would she?
I think she would be very amused. She'd say, oh, Mum.
Right. Yeah. A number of things that sort of come out in the book that stand out is that, first of all, there's this relationship with Mubarak that is quite difficult to understand. Because you're only hearing one side of a story. What is your understanding of what their relationship was?
I think it might have been quite intense at one stage, but I think they went their own ways and she couldn't let go of him. She was obsessively in love with him and she couldn't let go of him.
Have you ever met him?
Well, I tried to meet him when I was in Dubai, but he said he was in London at the time, which I didn't believe. But so I communicated with him. But
what was his reaction to her death?
Well, he said he didn't know about it, but I found that a bit strange, because in her handbag is her iPhone, and apparently quite a few of the people that were contacts on her iPhone had been contacted by the police. So I find it very strange that he didn't know, because he's a top businessman and they would have known who he was.
Yeah.
And they would have contacted him, but he said he didn't know. But then I can't say he did.
Yeah. She'd also converted to Islam.
Yes.
Was that something that you were aware of? You'd supported? You were?
No, I didn't know. Look, when she visited last time, she had her Quran, she had her prayer beads, and she used to wear that bio, which was a bit odd, walking with her, like in the lifestyle center in Belita with her, with her abaya, like very, very much a white woman. So that we got a lot of stares, but you get used to it. And then she would have her Quran and she would read it and she'd, but I didn't ever know if she was sincere about it.
Right.
I thought it might have been a phase, because she did the whole thing, the Buddhism, all sorts of different things. So I didn't really know if she was serious about it.
Yeah, yeah. What interaction have you had with her friends? Because obviously, as we look through the book, there are Facebook posts. But one thing we don't get from the book is a picture in terms of what the response was to a number of these posts, because a lot of them are quite, I don't know if disturbing is the right word, but concerning.
Yes.
They paint somebody, or they show somebody who perhaps is having quite a number of difficulties, perhaps mental health difficulties, spiritual difficulties. Mm. What was happening in terms of her friends who were around her? Were they responding to these messages?
Yeah, not much, no.
Do you think she was quite lonely?
Yes, I think she was. But she also liked her solitude.
Mm.
She liked being on her own.
Mm. Yeah. I found it a terribly sad.
Yes.
A terribly sad read, but also very much able to get the fire of
yes.
who Laura was.
Yes.
And I wonder if that's intentional. I'm fascinated to know about the book that will now, or the prequel.
Yes.
And your writing of
yes.
that. Is that part of a healing thing for you?
No, I believe that the whole story should be in book form of what happened with the Burj Khalifa and the whole story behind it, what happened before and also what happened afterwards, how I tried to cope with her death, which wasn't easy.
As somebody who's worked in Dubai and worked as a journalist in Dubai, I was not at all shocked to hear about when you term it a cover-up. And when I was there, a number of things would happen and we were told very strictly not to report on it. So that part of the story doesn't surprise me at all. Has anything changed at the Burj since this happened?
The windows, the gaps, they've changed them twice. I
think any acknowledgement, any connection between?
No, they changed the gaps secretively at the request of the Burj Dubai police. They told me that at the police station. They used to be staggered like that, and they made it all on an even line, smaller gaps. And then after I visited, because I stuck my head through and I stopped quite quickly because I was trying to work this out, and they then put a horizontal bar through the gaps, and they've also got, please don't put your head, don't go beyond this area, emblazoned on the glass. So, but when she died, there were gaps which were like
the
that.
Gaps, and I've looked, I saw the gaps, and they were incredibly small.
They weren't.
Well, I wondered if the photographs weren't showing a true.
No, because you could actually. Lara was pretty well my size, maybe a little smaller, slightly, not much, and she just slipped through it effortlessly. Totally effortlessly. And, you know, their children went and visited as well. They could easily have fallen there as well. But as I say, they were encouraged to take selfies, to stick their whole bodies out.
The problem, the one thing that I found as somebody who actually didn't get on with Dubai at all, it wasn't a place where I know some people have been very, very happy there. It wasn't a place for me at all, was the very false nature of the place. I found that very difficult.
Yes.
I found the preferential treatment towards Emiratis to quite an extreme to be quite difficult. There was very much, if anything ever happened, nobody, a local person would never be found guilty, for example, of any crime ever. And I think we see this also in news reports around, expats and the difference in treatment, but also around the idea that they don't want any negativity.
They don't.
At all.
Absolutely.
I remember reporting on a story once involving, an Emirati man who'd been accused of sexually abusing an expat child, a boy. And in the court documents, which of course we weren't allowed to show or then report on, there was a suggestion that the 10-year-old boy had seduced this 44-year-old man.
No, I can understand that. That's what they would say. It's called misinformation in Dubai.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you have liked to see the Burj say to you or do in response? And what has been their conversation with you?
Nothing.
Never?
No. Of course, they don't want to acknowledge it.
Are they denying that it happened there?
Yes.
They're denying it even?
Well, they're not really denying it. It's no comment. They won't talk to anyone. Like, I had Muhammad Alaba's personal phone number, his personal email address, which was given to me after the Daily Mail report. So I did communicate with him briefly.
Is he from Imar?
Yeah, he's the chairman.
Yeah.
Mohammed Alaba. And no, he didn't want to talk. And the journalist, Mark Sonokonoka, the last newspaper report, same thing. Nobody wanted to talk to him. Armani Hotel, nobody wants to talk to him. Nobody wants to talk about the incident. But I think I was very fortunate that the director of the Bir Dubai police station took pity on me, because I also lost my husband a month after Lara died. And I don't. I personally don't think a woman from another country would have been granted that privilege of going and speaking to the director of that police station.
Mm.
So I was very fortunate that they took pity on me. What happened afterwards, I just hope he's safe. I do. I hope he's okay, because you'd never know what happens in a country like that.
What's your happiest memory of Lara?
What is my happiest memory? I have to think hard. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know.
Even from childhood?
We fought all the time.
But you loved her?
Yes, I did. But sometimes I hated her. Mm. I think she hated me too, but that was the way it was.
So how will you remember her? Or how do you remember
Feisty.
Her? Where can people get hold of this book?
Exclusive Books.
Okay. It's called Lara's Voice, Whispers from an Angel. It's a tough read.
It is.
It's a tough read. I'm sure tough putting together also. She was just 38 when she died, and to know the manner in which she died also is very difficult. And as you read through the book and read the various posts, one gets the impression of somebody who, yes, feisty, but also incredibly vulnerable.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think also because she was born with a bilateral hair lip and cleft palate, I think that also added to the vulnerability, which also made her feel unattractive.
When you laid her to rest, was she laid to rest in the Islam faith or?
No, she was actually cremated in Dubai. I didn't know that she was a Muslim.
Until?
Until I got her luggage, when I found the certificates.
Sure. I wish you all the very best. I think you have
thank
gone
you.
Through what no parent should have to go through. Thank you for sharing this book.
Thank
and
you.
I look forward to reading the full story.